This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto, and I'm joined by two co-hosts today, Mr. Calvin Green, and welcome back after a little break, Dr. Wesley Francis, who is a Bahamian surgical oncologist and general surgeon. We have a very fascinating show today, as always. We are pleased and honored to have in the studio Ms. Sarah Cooper, who is a business consultant who specializes in bringing products to the market. She also specializes in AI, artificial intelligence applications. We also have Regina Wiley, who is well known to all of us as a veteran journalist and TV show producer, host extraordinaire. Welcome, first of all, Ms. Sarah Cooper and Ms. Regina Wiley.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's great to be here.
So AI, that's the topic today, and how it applies to our future and our daily lives. We're going to try to go in depth. I'm going to try to learn as the audience learns. I don't know a lot about AI, though, although even in medicine, I've seen it profoundly impact medicine in a positive way. Yeah. So artificial intelligence has been transforming the world in the last at least 4 to 5 years in a positive way. By automating and routine tasks, by hypercharging data processing, and basically driving revolution in unprecedented breakthroughs in science and medicine, particularly in healthcare. In healthcare, I've seen in radiology, where artificial intelligence can interpret complex scans such as CT scans, MRI, analyze biopsy scans, look at mammograms with extraordinary precision, enabling physicians to detect cancers and other diseases far earlier than traditional methods allow. It also has dramatically accelerated medical research by helping scientists predict millions of chemical reactions in the human body to discover life-saving drugs and vaccines at an accelerated rate. Speak to us a little bit about the impact and the advancements of artificial intelligence, Ms. Sarah Cooper, please.
Yes, well, wow, after that intro, I had to sit up straight in my chair. I would like to start off with the fact that I could be considered a novice user. And I think it's important to say that because I've spent about the past year and a half just given my career and bringing a product to market that is a vibe coding application. And I have learned a tremendous amount, more than I could have ever imagined that I would have learned given my background is in economics. I started in real estate development and then I went into manufacturing in West Africa. So very unrelated fields. And it's important to say that because, yes, it's true. AI innovation is here and it's going to continue. It's going to impact every sphere of business. But just because you didn't start out in it or have a long history in coding or development doesn't mean that you can't just simply spend a little bit of time to get to know how it can impact you in a positive way, your business or whatnot. But the barrier to entry is actually not too high. So after that introduction, I thought, whoa, we need to lower the stakes here. In the sense that, yes, I do have a lot of experience over this past year, and I am actually surprised at how well I've learned and how much I can build and what I can do. And I'm here to encourage everyone that you can do the same thing. I specialize in AI adoption because I have an operations background, and I'm able to understand what's needed for each individual business, no matter what that is. And then once you learn how to use the tools, you can find ways to innovate.
I find AI fascinating. I'm a novice myself, but I think I'm learning over the years, particularly in the last few months. Mm-hmm. I recall my brother telling me last year that he's a gastroenterologist in New Jersey. Okay. He stopped having to type or write any notes in terms of office visits because AI would listen to the conversation between himself and the patient and basically entire office visit precisely. All he ever to do is look over it, and most times he doesn't even have to edit.
Yeah.
In terms of studying with my children, it's fascinating. You can take entire textbook and summarize it, even into cue cards or even into animation or even make mock exams. It makes your life very efficient.
Yes.
That's what I would have to say. You can create a website in half an hour that previously would have taken weeks.
Best, yeah.
How has AI affected your life, and how have you seen AI change medicine from your point of view, Dr. Wesley Francis?
Well, I mean, you know, as with every new tool, right, it's how you use it. And I think, for example, you know, she talked about AI adoption in businesses. I recently adopted in my office, I have an AI receptionist. If you just tried it out, there's a local company that does it, and so what it has done is sort of streamlined the work. It's just that my receptionist doesn't have to be on the phone all the time, especially during high peak times when patients are in the office, so they can pay attention to the folks in the office, and when the phone is ringing, the AI receptionist can answer the phone, and basically. You know, troubleshoot any problem or deal with any problem that any patient calling in would have. And if they escalate it, if they can't solve it. And you know, we've only been doing it for a month now. And I think my staff, they embraced it. And they like it because it kind of takes away the mundane automated task, mm-hmm. right? And also patients who call in, some of them, not everybody like talking to a bot, which you would call, right? But they always get the phone answered. Because if your receptionist is doing something at the time with a patient in the office and someone's calling, sometimes, you know, those patients don't the phone doesn't get answered. Mm-hmm. So the phone gets answered all the time now. So you can see how it can improve efficiency. I mean, that's just a basic local thing in my office. But I mean, overall, from a surgery perspective, I mean, AI has been taking off. Like the whole aspect of robotic surgery, when you think about the robotic surgery companies, everybody think about the robot itself. But really, those companies are data companies. And they've just been storing the data on every surgeon out there. And at some point, mm-hmm. they're going to make those robots autonomous. And then the robots will be able to basically do surgery on their own at some point. But so this is really about assimilating data, processing it at a phenomenal speed, and then applying it to just generic or regular tasks that humans do. And they do it faster and more efficient. And that's what basically I think AI, that whole AI revolution is getting out there. And I think, you know, I was not a person who embraced it initially, but as I started to learn more about it, because, you know, I mean, there's some downsides to AI, too.
Yes, well, we'll definitely get into that.
Go into that, right. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I didn't embrace it initially, but I saw how it could streamline businesses, make business more efficient, and really take away those, you know, repetitive tasks that people just have to do.
Yeah.
And Calvin Green, how do you think that AI can improve our main industries, financial industry, the tourism industry, hotel industry? I know you evolved in hotel. I know that you just participated in a wonderful lecture by our two guests yesterday. What did you learn from that? And I know you were astonished. That's why you brought these two wonderful ladies onto the show.
Well, first of all, I must say, like Dr. Francis, at first when I started to learn about AI, I was a bit afraid, and I was saying to myself, I'm going to be left behind. I mean, because this AI thing is going to just take over everything. And then, like Dr. Francis, I began to embrace it. And now I love it. Sarah, about my, and I use it again. You know, when I wanted to create a flyer, I used to go to a graphic artist and have a graphic artist create a flyer for me. Now I just talk to AI and say, I need a flyer, and in 2 minutes I get a flyer. And so, this really, and then working with Sarah last night, she was able to show us how to, what I really wanted to talk about is this AI, because I've learned that there are different segments of AI. There's ChatGPT, and I learned about Bila.dev last night, mm-hmm. which is another side of AI, right? Yeah. And which can do a lot more than ChatGPT. So, and Bella was able, Bella was able to produce a website in 15 minutes. Yeah. I mean, right in front of us. And that was, you know, normally would, in a website, you'd have to go talk to the consultant and come back and forth. It'd take weeks. 15 minutes, we had a website.
Yeah.
So talk about that, Bella.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I love this. I love this because what we're seeing is every industry has opportunities to become more efficient. And it is the mundane things. Sometimes it is the stuff that your staff no longer has to do anymore, or processing huge amounts of data that would normally take teams, you know. And now all of a sudden, the ability to process or do these things so easily. But depending on the industry that you're in, AI adoption is going to look different. So we have the pleasure, obviously, of speaking with medical professionals, but it doesn't matter if you're in construction. It doesn't matter if you're a small business owner. If you maybe have been a teacher for your entire life and you've recognized things that could make teaching better, now all of a sudden you have tools that can help you build and ship products that can do exactly that. So it's essentially using this, the established industries, whatever you've been involved in, analyzing them and figuring out how can I make it better. So Biela.dev is the vibe coding platform that that we're discussing. And I'll kind of take a step back quickly. I won't take too long here, but when it comes to AI, there are many large language models, or you may have heard of LLMs, that are ChatGPT or Grok or Anthropic. These companies that are investing in collecting massive amounts of data. And then each of those large language models will produce applications that take the data and then apply it in different ways to help make different industries more efficient. So you have one that maybe, there's one called 11 Labs. 11 Labs specializes in voice, creating voice. And so probably our doctor friend here who has a new assistant, I guarantee that they're probably using 11 Labs because this particular AI specializes in creating realistic mm-hmm. voice. Mm-hmm. And then you've got, let's say, Suno, who can help you create music. So you've got a tune, you hum the tune, you upload it into Suno, now you can have songs, right? Well, vibe coding is essentially giving instruction and allowing that AI to write the code for whatever it is that you want it to create. And so a website is a perfect example of a really easy use case that a vibe coding platform can do. So if I want to build a house, I hire a construction company. I give them the layout. I tell them what type of foundation and all the details. And then the construction company, after months, builds me a house. In vibe coding, you simply talk to the application. And you say, I want to create a website for Guardian Radio 96.9. Our colors are blue, royal blue, and light blue. And I want it to feature the doctor, right? And so then AI will take that. And if you've got a logo, you upload that logo. And as you mentioned, in 15 minutes, the AI is going to think, it's going to process all of that data and say, if it was a radio station, what type of pages would it need on this website? And it's going to make some assumptions unless you give it the exact parameters. And at the end of the day, you've got a real live working website in 15 minutes.
That is absolutely amazing. I think it breaks down barriers between, closes the gap worldwide. So even from a medicine perspective, if you locally, we have a lot of persons of Creole descent. We can have a patient who speaks nothing but Creole
absolutely.
Come in. It'll enter their saying immediately, and vice versa, from English to Creole. It'll create the notes for the office visit. In multiple languages.
Yeah.
And you don't have to write. You can spend all of your time concentrating on the patient, on getting a diagnosis, on putting out the right questions. And it makes seeing a patient more efficient and even more personable, because all you're doing is spending all of your effort on trying to pay attention to the patient and becoming getting a management solution for them, not worrying about the paperwork or even the insurance billing. All that can be done by AI.
Absolutely.
So it makes your life very efficient.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Dr. Francis is going to wholeheartedly agree. It can answer all your emails. It can do all your customer service for you.
It can. And herein is where it could be a two-edged sword also, right?
Yes.
But the thing about it, it's learning. It learns, as you prompt it learns from you. It learns from the World Wide Web and stuff like that. When I think about AI, I imagine, and I know Green's in finance, anybody imagine doing any sort of data or collecting data without Google Sheets or Microsoft, not Word, but Excel? Can you imagine now in 2026 ever not having that application? And think about it, many years ago, people was doing the same work, but they didn't have that. And so it's like trying to do any database without Excel.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we can eventually get that with AI. Initially I said I wasn't embracing it, but I started to think about it like that way. Like, I don't do anything in any sort of data collection without using a spreadsheet. And a spreadsheet is just basically a fancy calculator that's code and all of that. And you put it in there. Can you imagine 50 years ago, they didn't really have that and they were just developing it. And I think AI is just like, okay, it's now starting to mature. And I think in the next 10, 15 years, that's all we're going to be eventually using. But AI has its own problems, and how do you regulate it? Because it has the potential to continue to learn, and it's going to come to a point where it can learn on its own without our prompts.
Well, I must.
How do you then stop that? And I think that's something that I suppose we should dive into at some point, right?
Well, I just read an article today where AI took over a company.
Yeah, I read that.
You read that article? Yeah. It just went rogue, and it took over
it,
the...
It hacked the company.
So, and I only wanted to bring that up because based on what you were saying, how it can go wrong. But getting back to, Dr. Pinto asked me, there's another thing about the class last night. There are five elements to learn how to prompt, how to tell AI the proper way to give you what you need. So there are five ways I've learned to do that now. When I go to make whatever I need, I know that there are five ways to prompt it so that I get the right information and it doesn't go beyond what I need, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right, sir?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and I think we're talking about adoption at two separate levels, okay? So the everyday business person is going to find ways to automate or make their business more efficient, inevitably. I have a daughter. She needed to learn her states and capitals. So I just built her an application and I said, gamify it. She needs to learn this. And that's exactly what it did. It took me 15 minutes. I didn't sell that application on the Apple store or the Android store. I just built it as a solution inside of my home. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at large companies that are positioned in places of global dominance, and let's say they turn over large amounts of their company, their data, storage, their processing, all this stuff to AI, those are things that we need to pay attention to. But that doesn't necessarily change what adoption can look like for the small business owner or right. for the local communities who are using the tool to actually build applications that promote business, that promote community. Because I actually feel a little bit different. I don't think that we're going to be in a situation of AI takeover. And I'll back that up by saying this. We currently are definitely in an AI race, 100%. Everywhere you go on the news, they're going to be talking about it. But I also am paying attention to kind of the story behind the story. And there is currently a race between specifically the United States and China, sort of this battleground of who's going to be in front. And I believe that the tactic of fear is a real tactic to motivate usage. And so there is an element of U.S.-based companies that I think are really actually pushing, if we don't do this, it's going to take over. And so part of the ploy, in my opinion, is kind of creating a fear. And the fear will almost make people want to use it because actually they're looking for the heavy usage of data. I don't think that there is a place where human beings are going to turn over their rights to robots. I just personally don't believe it'll come to that. But I do believe that large companies, globally dominant companies, are going to try to do a lot of things that are control-based. But I think that at the end of the day, it's us. And we are going to be able to stand up in the face of any of those things and recognize what's right for humanity and do that.
Well, Sarah, I was telling Dr. Pinto that I believe AI will probably reduce a lot of the administrative staff, and which will drive people more into blue-collar jobs, such as plumbing, electrical, because all the office people that you will need, you won't need as many of them anymore as we were so concerned last night about mm-hmm. how AI will take over mm-hmm. a lot of those jobs. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. And there's a bit of reverse psychology that goes along with the concept of AI adoption. Because when we talk about AI potentially taking over, what that means is that you, I, and everybody at this room is one day going to prefer to have a robot clean our house or a robot do our surgery or a robot drive us around in a car. And I just don't think that's realistic.
You know, people choosing now to get robots to do their surgery. No, but I understand what you're saying. And I mean, to a certain extent, I agree with you. I think it's going to, at some point, we regulations is what's going to have to happen, right?
Absolutely.
And we're going to have sensible regulations Absolutely. Surrounding this. Because, again, we're in a consumer-driven society, and every company that can use data to make our lives easier for them, they can monetize it and make profits. Because that's, at the end of the day, every business is about, you know, mm-hmm. improving shareholder wealth, right? And that's what they're going to do. But at some point, we, individually, we're going to have to press our policymakers to put some form of regulations Absolutely. In place that govern the usage of AI. And I mean, even in schools now, right? So, kids can go and write anything now. They don't have to maybe do the research. They can do it overnight. They can have AI do it for them. Is that good for them, right? So in the education sphere, mm-hmm. I mean, I could see a lot of problems happening, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and even personally, when you start to use AI more and more, you have to realize that, and again, you prompt it. But AI just, or the whole large language models just pull from already existing sources.
That's right.
And sometimes it can get those sources wrong. And that's where the whole AI hallucinations come from. So I think a user now becomes more of an editor. And I think more and more people, as they use AI, have to recognize that the information comes back to you very, very quickly. But you have to look at that and process Absolutely. That and make sure that it's accurate information, because it's just a machine trying to accomplish a task. Yeah. And it will do anything to accomplish that task, even if it pulls something that was quoted by somebody that was totally incorrect.
That's right.
And so you have to become more of an editor. So I think it takes over the writing task for you. Mm-hmm. But then you got to be more a person as you continue to do this. And so I think we will have to evolve as users.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And not just simply use it as we use Google as a search engine, but become more editors and be more innovative in our thought process and to realize how better to use it. That's what I think, you know.
Well, I think that the young generation now are embracing technology, AI.
By far.
But this is not unique to the Bahamas, but a typical young person, whether they're in primary school, high school, or even in university, particularly the younger persons, they think of studying with as much enthusiasm as watching paint dry. But AI can make learning fun. We've been studying decades, Dr. Francis, but it's not how many hours you study, it's how efficiently, and you have to study smart. You need to get the information in the most efficient way in the shortest period of time, particularly when you have a large volume to take in and you may have 8 exams with 8 vast subjects that you've been studying 3-4 years for, and you need to get all the pertinent points out. What is the scope, Ms. Cooper, in terms of education for young persons, for an 8-year-old, a 12-year-old,
yeah.
to use AI to do projects, yeah. to help them with homework, to help them efficiently study for major final exams?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm very glad you asked it. I have always been a lover of education. I'm a learner. I like to learn. And you're right. That's some of that is our personality, and then some of it's requirement. I started homeschooling my daughter. Absolutely love it. When she was in her private school, she struggled a bit with math. The curriculum didn't quite resonate with her. Distractions inside of the classroom were always a big thing. She's very social. And so when we started homeschooling, what I did with Biela.dev was develop a program designed specifically around her weaknesses. So she took her diagnostic tests, and I uploaded those diagnostic tests, and I said, I need to create a learning environment for her that will progress her through graduated stages of the areas where she's weak in. This type of custom solution could never have been available to me as a normal parent doing homeschool with my child. And again, I didn't package that up and sell it. I didn't buy it from anyone else. It was diagnostic inside my home, and because I have the tools of a construction company now in the digital space, it just simply took me coming up with the idea or coming up with the prompt to say, hey, act as an instructor for a 7th grade math student who's struggling in these areas, and ensure that it's adaptive so that as she learns, she's continuing to be challenged. By the end of the school year, if she were here, 10 toes down, she would tell you her favorite subject is math. Wow. She experienced such breakthrough because it was modifying the questions based on how she was learning. And now, today, presently, math is her favorite subject. That was a 1-year transformation.
Well, that's fantastic. But parents, how do they learn how to use AI as a tool?
That's a great question. And that's what we spent about 2 hours talking about last night. And what we continue to do, what we've committed to do more of with my host, Regina Wiley, who can be found at the Whole Woman Network on Facebook. But essentially, you know, and that's the reason why I started out the conversation with my background. While I am a student of economics and was in real estate development and manufacturing, these are not AI heavy industries, But what I want you to know is that it's actually not that difficult to learn because it is very intuitive. Currently, right now, over 1 billion people use AI daily.
Wow.
That's over 1/7 of the population of the planet, right? Now, that means that people are learning, they're experimenting with it, and adaptation into AI usage is happening faster than the internet itself. So it just goes to show there is a lot of mystery around it, and it is happening very quickly, so it can feel like you're drinking from a fire hose and you're not quite sure where to start. But what I like to tell people is large language models. There are many applications that are built on the data held by these large language models. But the only thing you need to be concerned with is your industry.
And it can make learning fun.
It can make learning fun in your industry, whatever it is. Some of the best things that you can even do is just to have a conversation with, like I mentioned, you're a teacher. How can we make teaching better? What are some of the consistent issues that we find in a teaching environment? Maybe that's private, maybe that's in public school. It could be a completely different industry. And you start out with the problems. And as you start thinking about the problems, you begin to then engage friends, family, colleagues, or even a ChatGPT and say, I want to create something innovative that's going to solve this problem. And you start to use the AI thinking model as your personal assistant.
I mean, I think about it in terms of a 14-year-old can spend 30 minutes with AI helping them learn a subject where someone can spend 8 hours and not take in the same information.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
And it's a very competitive world. You also have to be mindful of those, let's say, in your own class. Maybe 20% of them are getting AI help in terms of their learning. Yeah. You're disadvantaged by not embracing that technology, and maybe parents need to be aware. So when are you going to be back to, and we need to, on a grander scheme, try to educate the public on the applications of AI, and just even from that one perspective we're speaking about, parents and how they can help them in their whatever occupation they're in.
Yeah.
But particularly, the first priority is improving the future for their children. I think they would love to be able to let learning be fun, efficient, and let their children excel, even if they have difficulties in school. Maybe the personality of the teacher rubs that student the wrong way and they're completely turned off from English, or they're completely turned off from math. AI can actually bring them back in and make learning fun and make the subject they hate their favorite subject.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are committed to hosting events that allow for this type of facilitation. Why? Because I have seen that the greatest adaptation happens in community. Because as people get together and just have general human connection, talking about the things that matter to them most, right? Their family, what's going on with the kids in school, what's happening in the community. These are the most ripe and ready opportunities to find ways to innovate. And so our teaching last night was a bird's eye view. It was about, I mentioned, I think, could have easily been 8 different sessions that I just sort of flew over because I wanted to ensure that everyone in the room was at least brought to the same page, right? And then we went over the basics of a prompt, how to create an effective prompt, how to give it guardrails, right? And then we did create a product, and it was beautiful. It was based on a woman. I said, listen, I need a volunteer in the room to just raise your hand and tell me about a business idea that you're thinking of. And sure enough, this beautiful woman stood up, and it was an issue she'd been thinking about for years and was shocked that we could prototype a website fully built in 15 minutes. Now, this happens best in community. And so if you go to the Facebook page of Regina Wiley, which is thewholewomannetwork.com, and you sign up there, there's a QR code that you can sign up. There is a community that we are starting, and we're going to do biweekly sessions. We're going to have some in-person sessions as well, and we would be very happy to come back and tell you about them once we have them on the calendar, but we'll be sure to let you know.
I mean, as AI is expanding, there's so many different platforms. It's confusing to see which one is the easiest to use and which one would you recommend.
That's right.
In terms of for students, for teachers, for parents, Which are some of the more favorable and user-friendly platforms for AI, for education and learning?
And well, so there's a couple different ways you can go about this, right? And so right now we're sort of circling the elephant, okay? Yes. But what I will say is this. Biela.dev is a tool that helps you build products.
Okay. And so how does one get access to that?
Yes. The website is Biela, B-I-E-L-A dot D-E-V. Again, if you go onto the Facebook page, there's more information that I just mentioned and training videos and things. But this is built on many different large language models. So it's pulling the data from a lot of different models. So every application is designed to meet a need. This particular need is building stations, whether it be web-based, mobile-based. You can build Telegram bots. You can build literally infrastructure, if you will. And so one of the things that I like to even do with my daughter is challenge her to spend time building something rather than being a consumer. So I love what you say about that. Like, parents, engage your kids. Sure, they want to be on their devices, but teach them to build something or give them a tool that they can build something. Inevitably, it will serve them well later because the aha moment comes on and they feel proud of themselves, right? I mean, they feel proud when they build something in the backyard and they're like, come look, or in their room. And you get to, you know, provide that positive affirmation for the productivity. This can happen also in the online space instead of only just being a consumer. But to come back to the question, and I think this is why people have a hard time and it feels a little bit like drinking out of the fire hose, is depending on what your need is, the application that you use may be different.
Yes.
Right? And so one of the first things that I would say is go on to one of the free models, ChatGPT for free or Grok for free, right? And have a conversation around the thoughts that you have about the type of business or the type of problem that you're trying to solve. And the problem, being in operations for all of my career, it tends to be where I start. Like, what's the pain point, right? You don't need to fix it if it's not broken, but let's start out with the pain point. Where's the pain point? And so you identify the pain point and you have that conversation with your basic model to say, hey, I want to come up with an innovative way to address this. And as you start to have this conversation, what I like to refer to these models as, they're just my ideation partner. They are a brainstorming team member that is very well versed in basically every topic. And so once you start to have that conversation, maybe it's your kids and their curriculum, or maybe your kid wants to start a business. Once you start to have that conversation, you have to kind of go down the rabbit hole to figure out what solution or what application would be best to help you. And that's where community comes in, because you find out how your neighbor is using it, how your aunt is using it, how your different family members are using it. And then it starts to sort of roll, if you will.
Well, as we see AI expanding throughout the world and we have to have government regulation, you also have to have regulations within your own home as a parent.
Yeah.
You don't want them to just have free reign. AI can be dangerous. I mean, there are cases where it can lead to antisocial behavior, where there are growing concerns of negative mental health impacts, parasocial AI companions, where some persons... their best friend is a actual AI companion who you may tell them your greatest fears, and you may have suicidal ideations, and this AI can tell you basically to commit suicide or to harm yourself. It can be exceedingly dangerous. So with anything in technology, parents have to be there and they need to supervise.
Well, I want to expand a little bit on that, because I was reading Doc and everyone a story about a father who AI called his daughter using his voice, telling the daughter to go to the door. And somehow the father got involved with it, and he told her that he did not call her. But it was a good thing that he intervened, because the predator was at the door to carry her, thinking that it was her father telling her to come to the door. Mm-hmm. So the point that I'm making is these people who run away with children and sex offenders, you have to be very careful with that, because imagine if that girl had gone to the door, she would have been taken. And that, you know, those are the kinds of things that AI does.
I couldn't agree with you more. I feel that there's the greatest caution around using AI in an actual relational type of way. When I think about the most productive ways to use AI, for me personally, I feel like it's the tools that help you build things. The tools that help you bring to life, whatever that is. But I agree, I have seen some really, really scary stories around individuals who are actually personifying AI personalities and having relational with these. And I think that it's important that parents do know that these type of things are out there and, unfortunately, in some instances, are targeted directly at children.
So you see how you say that it's a tool to use to build something.
Yeah.
It's also a tool, because it's just a tool that could use to destroy something.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I was reading a paper the other day where, you know, they're using AI in pharmacology to make new drugs. And so, you know, it can change the molecule for a good drug, and it can change it to make a poison. And so the same thing that you can use it for good, you can use it for bad. And so hence, this is why it's important that the regulations, or at least some regulations, again, in your home, at the community level, at a country level, region level, and the whole world for that matter. Because, you know, someone can be sitting in at home on the computer just figuring out, well, how do I and engage in the model? How do I break into homes? They can do that because it's just a tool. And then so, again, we use it on a business level to adopt to improve efficiency, and then you could also use it to break down things. Mm-hmm. And that's the sad thing about it, and that's where the caution comes in. Mm-hmm. And that's the two-edged sword of this, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is the caution, mm-hmm, I think, that we have to let people know about, right?
Yeah.
Because there are good people who are going to make it, mm-hmm, good, and then there are criminals out there who are trying to figure out, well, how do I get around the security cameras and all that? AI will help you do that.
And, of course, there's the rise in deep fakes and AI-driven fraud.
Yeah.
We have to look at the potential for long-term decline in critical thinking if persons rely on AI
to
do all their reasoning and to make life decisions for them.
Absolutely.
We got to look at cybersecurity, threats, data privacy issues. It's a complex issue.
Yeah.
Intellectual property infringement, lack of accountability. Then with the elephant in the room, job losses, that's also up. But obviously, you have to look at it from the other. It can expand and create an industry in itself.
Yeah, and I think it's going to force people to be more creative, right? So if I can use AI to create a website in 15 minutes, that means it's democratized that skill. So the people who are making websites, they're now out of business, right? But now they have to then innovate and create. They can figure out, how are they going to become more useful to me or solve a problem that I have? I mean, we all have an insurmountable amount of problems. And I think business is really about finding a problem that people have. And if you can solve it for them, they're willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to, well, people will have to innovate and be more creative. And I think that's what AI is going to force us into. So those jobs that you think that you're going to be losing, it's going to create other jobs, and not necessarily blue-collar jobs. You have to find a way to make sure that you still become relevant and you're useful to people around.
Right? Yeah, but you're right. I mean, the guardrails around it is presently, market analysis perspective, innovating so fast that there are not regulation really around the growth of it. It's happening globally. right? It has global impact. And so regulation around it is really still, I mean, it's an idea at this point. And so there is risk in that. I agree. I can sit in the seat that I'm in and I can have influence in the places where I'm called to. And my seat of influence is different than yours or Absolutely. Anyone else's in this room. Right. And so the important thing from my perspective is really the overall collective decision about who are we at, you know, as humans and what is our moral makeup? What is the overall purpose, right? Because we can't defend those things at any sphere of influence if we're unsure about them. And I think that it's important to have these conversations because everyone at every sphere of invited into a moment where they have the decision. Do you allow it to be made into a poison or do you allow it to be made into a life-saving thing that cuts out cancer, right? Or whatever other thing. And that is really the essence of humanity, right? I mean, it's propelled very weighty conversations in a very fast-paced manner. Yeah. And it's not something that we can get around. But I will tell you, unfortunately, historically, we kind of have thought that if we didn't talk about it, it would just go away. And for many different things, it's kind of happened, it's here. But it's here.
It's yeah. not going anywhere. Yeah.
And it's just evolving. It can help every profession. One of the more difficult professions on earth is a teacher. And mm-hmm. teachers are overwhelmed. They have so many things that they have to deal with, even socially with children who have a lot of things going on at home. And let's say they're teaching grade 7, they're teaching grade 9, they're teaching grade 12. They can have a lesson planned out for 7th grade level in minutes. They can have it for 12th grade. And they can spend that time, extra time, trying to have personal interactions with their children, reaching out to those who may be having issues in terms of learning disabilities or home strife or abuse and everything else.
Again, it's a tool. And I'd say policymakers, you have to, or let's say Ministry of Education, mm-hmm. that's the policymaker, right? You have to now try to encourage this because then you can just go teach the traditional way, right? Where they have lesson plans that they do and they teach the traditional way, kids. I think the way we were taught many years ago is probably not as useful today.
Almost obsolete, yes.
Yeah, you know. And so how do we evolve? Like, so the curriculum that was done 5 years ago probably needs to change. And then AI is a tool that can, at a more rapid pace, with the use of data that's been collected over a period of time, change that and allow teachers and other professionals to adapt to their current environment. But then we have to embrace it to be able to do that. I'm sure there are some archaic rules in our educational system that probably prohibits all of that stuff, right? Which then now it pigeonholes the children into a way that, you know, this traditional mode of teaching or learning. And I think the way we learn now is totally different. And again, who knows what a slide rule is anymore, right? Who does long division with the long way anymore? Nobody does that, right? So, but we had to learn all of those things. Now we have, and again, I use the example of Excel. You have Excel, you can do anything in Excel almost. This is a calculator, you can calculate anything. And now, again, you have this other tool. And so, but we have to embrace it, use the tool, because I think the times require it. Because, you know how the Bible say in the end, the knowledge will increase?
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, knowledge is
massively increasing.
Exponential right now, right?
I mean, the scope is vast. You can get legal advice in minutes.
Yeah. No, you don't need no... So I shouldn't say that, right? Yeah. But I mean, putting together contracts and stuff like that, I mean... But again, let's caution, right? You have to be an editor. See, the writing role has been replaced, not the editing role, that's because right. It will write something for you that's garbage.
Yes.
And if you don't read it yourself before you hand it over, and that person, you know, you can make like real lethal mistakes that way.
Well, every educator, every teacher has to be well versed in AI, because they're going to have kids turning in projects, homework, essays, and you need to be able to use that AI tool to determine whether it was created with AI.
Absolutely.
Because it's completely unfair for someone to spend a month preparing a project and someone does it in 5 minutes with AI.
But here's the difference, though, right? Okay. So you're going to penalize the person who finds a more creative way to do something that makes their time more efficient and they do other things. You're going to penalize that person. You use this tool. Or do you now encourage everybody to use it and see how creatively they can use it? And then the assessment is then based on that.
Yes.
Right?
True.
And I think that's where we have to evolve to.
But, Doc, don't forget now, they're the have and they're the have-nots. And what I mean by that is they're in some schools, parents can afford those kinds of things.
I agree to you to a certain extent, but I believe, and I would say even, and I could be wrong, but I believe that a lot of kids have some access from somewhere, right, to a computer, right? And one of the things about the internet and AI and search engines and all that, it has democratized a lot of things, right? If they don't have it at home, they should have it in the school. You see? And this is why, again, we go back to our policymakers. If it's not available at home, make it available in school, right? And so that everybody then would be able to use this.
Okay.
You know, one of the things I think interesting specifically around education is I think we're seeing a confrontation between the public and private sector that cannot be avoided. Because if schools, just for bureaucracy reasons, decide to stay behind, the tool is still there. It is going to be used. And there's no way that they can stop it from happening.
Absolutely.
And so the education system is not going to change. It's already changing right now, presently. And so it's interesting because we could very easily face non-responsive schools that are tied up in bureaucracy and then nobody wanting to send their children to those schools. And being able to access online education that is tailored towards their children in a way that actually causes them to learn at the speed and pace that they have an interest to learn. And what parent doesn't actually want their kids to learn? I think we could be looking at a massive shift away from public education to much more privatized styles. When I decided to do homeschool for my daughter, it was a decision that I knew I wanted to make for a long time, but I had no idea how massively supportive the environment actually is. Because you can only provide these type of solutions that are steeped in bureaucracy for so long and then watch the degradation of our education system just go down and down without seeing the market respond. So it is a clash between the public and private.
Well, I think we have a Ministry of Innovation now, eh? We do?
I have been interested to get to know about the Ministry of Innovation.
That's a very famous name out there, right? The minister. So it's not going to be hard.
Ms. Regina Wild, I know you're trying to bring AI to the masses. What is in your future in terms of how we are going to accomplish that? Who are you going to look out to embrace this technology? Is it going to be, are you going to take it by professions? Or are you going to take it, this is for this age group, the younger persons, the older persons, everybody in between? How are we going to get the Bahamas to learn, embrace, and basically utilize to the fullest extent artificial intelligence before we're left behind?
Oh, good afternoon, everyone. One of the things that I've put into place, I am a mentor. I mentor a group of girls under the my company, I Got You Girl. And what I've been working on for the summer is a program for young girls between the ages of 13 to 18. And that program was where we were going to teach them for 2 weeks how to do exactly what Sarah was speaking about. We were going to take them in, teach them how to prompt, teach them how to go in and create the websites, all of that, how to start their own businesses, offer them entrepreneurship training. But what has happened is, you know, sponsors and funding comes very slowly. And we have been walking through the process of getting funding for the programs to get the girls in the room to be able to get this training. And we were working to get it done while Sarah was in town because she was here from the 6th of July.
Wow, okay.
And she's leaving on the 26th of July.
Okay.
And so we had a hold for the girls. But it has been challenging. And not that I have given up, because what we have decided to do is we're going to take it online. And we're going to do the courses online with the girls. That is a commitment, because I believe, as an older woman, I'm supposed to be training the younger generation. And that is my purpose, to help these young women to be able to be trained and equipped to be able to maintain themselves and understand how powerful they are. And then we have the business model where I Got You Girl Business, which had the platform last night. And last night it was so amazing. One of the ladies who was in the room, she said to me, can I go back outside and come back and pay again? That's how amazing the event was last night that Calvin was at. And he's so excited about my mission. We're going to build community, as Sarah said, around Biela.dev. And we're working with a platform in the country that gives persons who become a part of this platform the ability to be paid for any website. You can get paid when you create a website. That has always been a challenge in the country. And we've sat down and worked out how we're going to make that, again, find the problem, create a solution. And that's what we're doing.
Well, that's fascinating. and I applaud you and your efforts. And I think that where there's a will, there's a way. I'm sure a platform such as this can bring out funding. There are a lot of very successful individuals out there who love the country and want to empower the youth. And I'm sure that if we can reach them, mm-hmm. the funding is not a problem.
Mm-hmm. Once they reach out, because what we do is, once you become a sponsor, we give you your girls.
Yes.
And then we're planning events where once the girls come through the courses, you can come in and see what your young woman has created. So it's more or less like you've adopted that young person, because this isn't something that I've just started. I've been going in the schools and mentoring. I have young women that are police officers, and I go into stores and they're like, you don't remember me, hey? And I'm like, no, you mentored me when I was in the 7th grade.
Wow.
I'm not new to this. I'm true to this. I do this. And so this isn't something that I'm talking. This is what I'm going to do. Now, it has been a challenge with me getting it done, but that doesn't ever stop me. Anybody who knows who I am, I took the option to give up off the table when I turned 40. So this is going to be done.
Very inspirational. Well, I think the first surgical oncologist at Behem in history is good for sponsoring about 25 girls. Right, Dr. Wesley Francis?
That's right.
He's looking at me like
I like to follow lead, right? Mm-hmm. And Dr. Pinto, I will match whatever he does.
I come in agreement with both of you. Let me just be careful about how I say what I say, because there have been some sponsors that have been on board with me. There's J.S. Johnson, who has made a contribution. There are some several companies that have made contributions. But when you look at the whole scheme of things, when you have to feed these girls lunch every day, and all of that, it takes a village.
Yes,
and we're absolutely calling on the village.
Well, we always talk about trying to create as many lights in the darkness as possible and never giving up. Yeah. And there's always hope. So I think that you're inspirational. I didn't even know you were doing these things.
Yeah.
So this is a wonderful platform, and we have a very large audience out there. And I'm sure all of us will try to help you in every way possible.
Oh, yeah.
But even AI itself, as a typical... person out there, AI can teach you how to use AI.
Yes. In fact, you know, it's funny. I talk about it's been about a year and a half I've been in the industry, but I'm surrounded now by developers in a number of conversations, and quite often they say things, and I go right to AI and I type what they said, and I said, "Explain it to me."
Yeah.
in a novice term, so that way I can keep up with, you know, the conversations that are happening amongst developers as they're talking about the roadmap and all of the different, you know, MCP connections they're making. And I'm doing this. Yes, absolutely. It can teach you. It can teach you very, very efficiently. Yes.
So again, it's how this tool has democratized. I mean, knowledge, this kind of knowledge usually was kept in certain spheres and certain professions and stuff like that. And now it's totally wide open.
Yeah.
Anybody can become an expert.
But I've seen the negative impact just from ChatGPT, where I've seen patients come in. Even I can think of two cases of advanced colon cancer. They said, maybe 2 years ago, I had blood in my stool, and ChatGPT said it might be a hemorrhoid, it might be rectal cancer, it might be colon cancer. They picked out what they wanted to hear. It was hemorrhoids, and then they go with that. And then they're reassured in their false notion that, you know, there's nothing wrong, and what could have been preventable at that stage becomes advanced cancer three years later.
It's how people use it. I encourage them. I love an educated consumer or an educated patient, because then I can have a conversation at a different level.
Yeah.
But
you have to be mindful, even in medicine, not every source is reputable.
And absolutely.
Because it's a wrong. Capitalist.
But it's an opportunity for you to educate.
Correct.
And I think in medicine, what we do is we educate. We have to educate a lot of people on what they do. Because they'll learn, they'll catch these things. But then it'll force you now to have to really educate people as to what is the right thing to do. So I am never afraid of when someone read ChatGPT and they come to the office and say they read ChatGPT. Yeah. Chat told them this. Say, okay, well, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Right? I encourage it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Because then it gives me an opportunity to educate them. And you know what?
What about
I like when people are invested in their own health.
And those who self-diagnose using ChatGPT, the danger of that.
And then you have to encourage them too. Look, this is really what you're seeing, and then this is what we have to do.
But one of the things that I like that Dr. Francis keeps saying is you have to become an editor. I'm a journalist. And as a journalist, you know, we have to have an editor. One of the reasons why we have an editor as a journalist is because when you're working with something, you don't see the error. Right. So the reasoning that he brings to the table is a powerful one. Because ChatGPT and all of the other AI platforms are fed information. And like he said, it could be from anywhere, from somebody who's like in a senile ward that gives it some information. You can't just take what you get and not be responsible and accountable to go in and make sure that that information is verified. You don't just go in there and say what you want and take it and just run with it. You sit down, you edit it, you go through it, you correct it, and you make it what it needs to be. And then he made another powerful point where he spoke about parents. As a journalist, I resigned and went home and raised my two children because I wanted to be a part of their lives up to a certain point. I have two of the most amazing human beings on the planet. I could tell anybody that. That's because I invested in my children. Any parent who's worth their salt, no matter what comes about AI, PI, QI, you are responsible to be there to make sure that your children is doing the right thing.
Well,
if they do homework, you have to take that homework as a parent, wherein whether it was AI or they did it out of their brain, you're accountable to sit there and be responsible for what is being done. That is a parent. And anybody who says parenting is easy is not raising a child, because parenting is not easy.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It requires time. And I sacrificed for years I didn't go out. I didn't have a life. My life was my children. Mm-hmm. And now my reward is my two amazing children.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
And that's what a parent is. Whether it's AI, you don't be afraid of it because you think it's going to do this. Mm-hmm. You be accountable and responsible.
Yeah, yeah.
That's.
And you certainly don't let it parent your kids.
That's what
your
it
kids,
is.
Or babysit
your
children. You're
still the parent.
Yeah.
Irrespective.
Yeah.
So for some of the non-believers out there of AI, Ms. Cooper, what are some of the most extraordinary things that you, as even a relative novice, I'm sure you're leaps and bounds above the general person out there, but has really astonished you in terms of what AI can actually do?
Yeah. So one thing I want to say just quickly that the doctor mentioned, and also Regina again, when you are working with ChatGPT or any of these, you guys, this is a tip from last night. Tell it to cite all of its sources. And then you personally go and look up those sources.
Yes.
Okay, that's just free. That's for free. I'll come back to the question. You know, for me, so I am the daughter of an African man. And we had a pathway that was well-defined. There was a few options. Business was one of them, and that's the one that I chose. And I learned industry because that's what made sense. And I learned to train myself in ways that I would not have maybe naturally been inclined to because, and I know that many people share this thought where you your path and you see the benefit and you see the life that it can afford you and you go down this path. But you've actually got passions, other things that you like to do. But they can't take center stage. For me, one of the most exciting things has been being able to take things that have been lifelong passions and interests and actually bring them to life. So I've been able to write music and create songs that I would not have went to the studio and paid a full band and done all of these things to come up with. But through a platform called Suno, I was able to take concepts and turn them into music. Again, similarly to Regina, I believe deeply in investing in my children. And I love being a mom. And I take it very seriously. And so when I could perceive that my child was having a hard time, I was also very happy to be able to be cognitively aware of what was going on with my child and come up with a solution and actually watch the light bulb go on for her as she overcame something. And now she went from avoiding a topic to actually running to that. And that is the empowerment that we want to bring our kids up with. You can approach hard things, you can overcome them. And to be able to build that type of solution inside of my own home was phenomenal.
Wow, that is amazing. How do you think AI is going to influence your life going forward, Calvin, business-wise, social-wise, now that your eyes are open?
Well, I'm really looking forward to working with AI. After last night's session, I am committed to the everyday process of being a student of AI. And I believe that's the only way I'm going to be able to overcome it. I'm involved with a lot of programs, things, and I see AI as the way to chart the course and to help me to overcome a lot of these. I've gotten the commitment from Regina to help me through this minefield. And so I'm really, really looking forward to it. And I think it's going to be the future for me with business and everything else. And I don't see no, and after watching a website being built in 15 minutes, I see no other way to go, yeah.
And can you remind the audience, Ms. Wiley, what is your website?
They can go to igotyourgirlbusiness.com. And the information is about the event last night, but we're going to update the website as soon as we get back on our feet because we've been running. Or they can go to the Whole Woman Network Facebook page and they can scan the QR code. Once they scan the QR code that is on the Whole Woman Network Facebook page, they can register on biela.dev. And once they register there, there's videos, training videos there that can walk them through our steps in how to use Biela, as well as we're going to start a community around it, like we talked about. We have a lot of stuff that Sarah and I are putting together before she gets off the island on the 26th, and we're still going to be working together when she gets back to California. So we're putting together curriculum and everything for persons to be able to continue to learn, and we want a community where persons can bring their children, bring their girlfriends, bring their friends, and all of us get together and we come up with ideas, and we could build things that can change this country.
It's fascinating and very exciting. When is your next event? Well, that's
we'll let you know first.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We're planning right now.
So this has gone very quickly. I'm fascinated, and I'm really gonna. I can't wait to go home and look into AI some more myself. The future is very bright. Any closing words, Ms. Sarah Cooper, in terms of AI and the future for the Bahamas?
Yeah, sure. I would say we are at the tip of the spear. You may feel like it's happening so fast and you're behind the eight ball, but I can tell you right now today, if you're listening and like Calvin, just make a commitment to become a learner. The more you learn, the less overwhelmed you'll feel, and you'll also be able to contribute in valuable conversations that are around responsibility, that are around regulation, that are innovative ways that you can make your life better. So just make a commitment to learn. I would say of sticking your head in the sand and acting like it's not happening.
And Dr. Wesley Francis, I know you're now embracing AI. Is that going to continue to grow in your office?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the present. I didn't say the future. It's the present.
And we can't ignore that, or we're going to be left behind as a country.
Yes.
And as individuals. Yeah. Calvin, I thank you for organizing this. We need to do this again. My platform is always open to such endeavors. And if you guys are leaving on the 26th, I'm sure we can fit it in. And when you come back, we're always welcome here. And Ms. Wiley, thank you very much. Ms. Cooper, thank you very much. Have a very safe and good night, Bahamas. This is Urologist Speaks with Dr. Garvey Pinto. Good night. But letting your pencil make you feel like a champion. Rise up again. Let nothing keep you down. And live your